Radio Prague News.
Czech secret police archives are cited in reports about the British Labour leader. The Russian mother of an alleged hacker appeals to the Czech president, and a Czech computer game looks like a worldwide hit. Czech archives are being cited in British press reports about reported meetings between Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn and a Czechoslovak spy during the 1980s. The tabloid The Sun said Corbyn met with a spy using diplomatic cover at least three times, twice at the House of Commons. Archive documents published by the paper appear to show he was sounded about his views on national liberation movements, the Middle East and Persian Gulf, and British and US attitudes towards the Soviet bloc. Corbyn's comments were described as too general to be useful. The secret police STB officer, reportedly codenamed Jan Dimitz, was, according to Slovak archives, the real name for Jan Sarkozy, a Slovak STB agent who started working in London in May 1986 but returned to Czechoslovakia in 1989. A Labour Party spokesman said Jeremy Corbyn did not knowingly meet with any spy and that no sensitive information had been given. The mother of an alleged Russian hacker being kept in a Prague prison has appealed for his release to Czech President Miloš Zeman. Russian paper Izvestia said the mother of 30-year-old Yevgeny Nikulin wrote last week, highlighting the illegal actions, the so-called illegal actions of Czech police, and the fact that one of her oldest sons had already died. Nikulin was detained in October 2016 and is suspected of hacking major US corporations. Both Russia and the US have requested his extradition, with the final decision resting with the Czech Ministry of Justice. Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has said that the country's adherence to the European Union's so-called fiscal pact will have no real impact on the Czech Republic. The government approved membership of the fiscal pact, which sets broad guidelines for budgets, deficits and economic policy, on Wednesday. Babiš said that ratification of the treaty behind the pact could improve Czech standing within the EU and pointed out that the country could not take a negative stance on everything. He was speaking to members of the upper house, the Senate. The Czech interactive computer game Kingdom Come Deliverance has already notched up encouraging sales within days of its release on the worldwide market. Prague-based Warhorse Studios, which created the game based on a storyline from medieval Bohemia, says pre-sales total around 100,000, with another around 350,000 copies of the game going on general sale. The game is one of the most expensive and ambitious to have ever been created in the Czech Republic, with an eye on the multi-billion dollar world games market. Sales of the game were launched on Tuesday. And finally, a look at the weather. Friday should be cloudy with sunny intervals in the north and centre of the country, but rain could fall in the south. Top daytime temperatures will range between 3 and 6 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, taxi drivers curb their protests, we visit a special Doll's House exhibition, and later, a bit of magic. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A protest by taxi drivers that would have again blocked the streets of Prague on Thursday was cancelled after a meeting between their representatives and government members. Taxi companies have been assuaged by pledges to rein in the target of their AI, Uber and similar services. Ian Willoughby reports.
Taxi drivers deliberately created tailbacks that held up traffic in the Czech capital last Thursday and Friday, and again this Monday. They were protesting against app-based services like Uber, which have made significant inroads into their business and which they regard as unfair competition. Taxi firms had been planning to mount another protest on Thursday. However, they called it off after talks between their representatives and Prime Minister Andrej Babiš and other cabinet members of the Office of the Government. The Minister of Transport, Dan Ťok, told reporters after Wednesday's meeting that he'd put forward fresh legislation to curb the current activities of Uber, Taxify and similar services.
Today, this form of mediation is considered a free business. but it should be an authorised business. It should be clear that the mediation of rides can only be done by licensed taxi drivers. Some companies are abusing the current situation by presenting it as ordering a shared ride with anybody who has a driving licence and a car.
Also present at the meeting on Wednesday was Karolina Venslova, deputy leader of an association of taxi drivers. She welcomed the government's position.
They are issuing a statement aimed at Uber and Taxify, calling on them to respect the laws of this country. That's already a major step. It never happened here before that the government acknowledged that we are probably in the right or that right is on our side.
Ms. Venslova also said that she expected Uber and like companies to either withdraw from the market or adhere to the appropriate regulations. For her part, Uber spokeswoman Miroslava Jozova struck a conciliatory tone when she spoke to Czech radio.
We think it's appropriate to regulate companies like Uber. We welcome efforts by the Czech government to accelerate that process. We are willing to hold discussions and to find solutions to the future of transport with all sides so that we do what is right for users, for drivers and for cities.
ANO MP Patrick Nacher said that next week a meeting should be called at the lower house of all deputies' clubs that support the introduction of legislation to curb the activities of Uber et al. Meanwhile, taxi sector leader Karolina Venslova said her organisation's members may have called off Thursday's action, but they were still on protest alert.
Ian will be reporting there on temporary relief from the taxi protest. A major exhibition of dolls' houses from the Victoria and Albert Museum of Childhood in London is now on display in Prague. Through the stories of 12 dolls' houses from the past 300 years, visitors to the Museum of Decorative Arts in Prague can follow the history of the home, everyday lives and changing family relationships. Ruth Frankova reports.
The exhibition called Small Stories at Home in a Doll's House was put together for the Victoria and Albert Museum of Childhood in London back in 2014 and then travelled all around the world before making its last stop in the Museum of Decorative Arts in Prague. Helena Koenigs-Markova is the museum's director.
It is a so-called travelling exhibition which started in London and then it went in two places in Great Britain and to Washington. And before Prague, it was on show in Finland, in Turkey, and we are the last stop.
The exhibition showcases country mansions, the Georgian townhouse, suburban villas, newly built council estates and high-rise apartments. The houses are furnished to every detail and brought to life by the characters that live or work there. Each house is displayed at a particular time of day and visitors can use buttons alongside the showcases to activate the narration and light up each character as they talk. Displayed chronologically, the houses also show developments in architecture and design. The oldest item on display dates back to the year 1760. Helena Koenigs-Markova again.
One of the oldest houses is so-called Tate Baby House, which was passed from mother to the oldest daughter, over six generations, in fact. And in the 20s of the 20th century, it was bought for the Trent Albert Museum collections. There is a nice house from the 30s, so-called White Lady's House, designed by an artist, and it shows modernist country villas emerging in Hempstead at the time. And it goes till the 21st century, contemporary house, ordered by a toys company. It's called Kaleidoscope House because it's made from translucent walls in different colors. So each of the houses enable us to see daily life from different centuries.
Among other items on display, you can admire the Killer House, a gift from surgeon John Egerton Killer to his wife and daughters in the 1830s, designed as a Chinese-style cabinet furnished with gilded wallpapers, four-poster bed and servants. You can also see a Second World War-era family prepared for an air raid with miniature gas masks, ration books and torches for blackouts in the so-called Hopkinson House, which is based on on the houses of London County Council's 1930s suburb. The exhibition Small Stories at Home in a Doll's House will be on display at Prague's Museum of Decorative Arts until the 13th of June.
And now it's time for our regular feature and a bit of magic from a Czech practitioner.
Ondřej Pšenička is an award-winning Czech magician who, despite being only 31 years old, has spent almost two decades in the field of magic, coming up with great acts and great tricks. And not long ago, as you heard there, he appeared on Penn & Teller's show called Fool Us, which offers participants a chance to fool that famous duo with a trick of their own design. How did Ondřej do? Well, with a little help from actress Allison Hannigan, he succeeded with a card trick using his own brand butterfly cards. And how did he do it? Well, if he didn't tell Penn and Teller, he sure as hay isn't going to tell us. Instead, when we met at Czech Radio, I began by asking him what first attracted him to magic when he was a kid.
I know when I started doing magic, which was when I was 10 years old, but I don't really know what it started, what was the trigger. I believe that I probably saw something on TV. Probably David Copperfield, because that's what was on TV. But I also remember, actually, that's one of my first memories of magic on TV. It was Penn and Teller. It was Penn and Teller doing this weird stunt of a car or a truck going over someone's body. And then they explained how it's done, actually. It was part of their show. I have not seen it since. But I had to be like 9 years old or something.
Mm-hmm. And that was their hook initially, wasn't it? That they kind of showed behind the scenes.
Yeah. And they marketed themselves as the bad boys in magic. And also, for instance, in London, there's the oldest magic club in the world. And they are banned from the magic circle because they expose magic. Even though they do everything great for magic. Otherwise, the magic circle is a little old school, I'd say. And they just banned them, even though, whatever, they're one of the greatest magicians in the world.
The first time you succeed at anything, there's a kind of thrill the first time you succeed at something. If you experience that, I guess, early on, you thought, wow, this is something really actually interesting.
What I remember is my first three magic tricks, because I started going to this magic club for kids, and we had this little notepad, and I remember the first three magic tricks, and interestingly enough, they were all card tricks. They were quite basic, but still, if I would show you today, you probably wouldn't know how it's done, because even though they were basic, they were quite good.
Cards, of course, are an important part of a magician's act. There's always all kinds of tools, and it's become quite popular now. I know there's different clubs for children, as you yourself right. mentioned. But even when you go to the toy stores around the Czech capital, you see now that they're selling kind of magic kits.
Yeah.
I guess at some point, sooner or later, every magician chooses maybe some implement which is dominant. You have an affinity for cards yourself. It seems to me that you have to make a choice at some point.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's better to specialize in something because then you're just better in that one thing. But what's funny about my case is that magicians around the world know me as a card magician, as a card guy. And I'm not. I started on stage, doing stage magic, a silent act with music. And it wouldn't be until 5 years in when I started doing close-up magic, the small things in intimate settings. And cards, I got in cards more when I started studying acting, because then theater consumed my time mostly. I just couldn't do stage magic anymore because that is something you can't really do all the time. But cards, it's very practical, you know, in school, under the desk, right? So like hiding and practicing. You can practice moves all the time. I have cards in my hands right now.
Are you going to shuffle them for us?
Yes. This is a riffle shuffle. This is how Czechs shuffle cards. So that's the difference between sounds. So here we have Czech shuffle. And here we have something what Europeans call the American shuffle, right?
Right.
Then we have the card spring. And then we have the card drop. and we can leave them there for a minute until I really need to touch them again.
And we're going to talk specifically about your cards a little bit later on in this interview, because they are now quite a strong part of your act, and not only because you use them, but also because you developed this particular line. But we'll get to that in just a moment, so the listeners will have to wait for that. But you said you studied acting. I read that it was at the Lee Strasberg Theater and Film Institute in L.A.
That's
of course, Lee Strasberg is known as really the father of method acting.
That's correct.
What led you to acting? Was it just you branching out? Was it a different goal originally, or was it connected to the magic?
It was totally connected to magic. I wanted to study acting to become a better magician. That was the ultimate goal. I just wanted to be better in magic. And that's also because after many years, I decided to go back to magic. It was after 8 years, 6 years of studying acting, 2 years of practice. And after those 8 years, I decided to go back to magic because during those 8 years, I had the struggle if I'm an actor or a magician. You know, one would say you can be both, but you can't really be excellent in both. It's really hard. The final decision was, I love acting and I love magic. If I do acting, I can do a lot of acting, but I don't always have to do magic. But if I do magic, I always have to do both, because good magic is not good without good acting.
One of the big successes that you've had is appearing on Penn & Teller's show, which was very recently, a few months ago, basically.
That's right.
And that program is called Fool Us, for those who might not be familiar with it. It's in its fourth season. And
they just announced fifth season.
And they just announced a fifth. That must have been very exciting for you. I mean, to get on the show, and how long did it take you to prepare that particular trick?
It was great
to decide?
And funny. Also, most of the magicians, how they get on the show is they think, to appear on Fool Us, it's a good publicity. So you want to go there and do something. So they think, what could I do? But for me, it was that one day I was practicing my act for the Magic Castle because I wanted to tape it and give it to the entertainment director and get hired. And then one of the effects in that act, which I came up with, I realized that it's perfect for the show. You know, with the headphones and everything, then it's Penn and Teller sitting in those chairs, and there's Allison, who could do it, who could perform it for one of them, which would be Penn, because Teller can't talk, so Penn has to be there. And I could go sit in Penn's chair right next to Teller and just watch her fooling him, possibly, right? So that would be amazing. And that was actually one of my favorite moments in the show, when I go sit next to Teller. And also, it was one of my first thoughts, one of my first images that I saw when I was developing that act for that show.
I can't even say your name, and I'm
pleasure to meet you. I'm Andre.
I know. Hi.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Thank you for helping. Would you please shuffle the cards?
I'll give a try.
What happens when you don't fool them? Is that just a sinking feeling? And did you worry that perhaps you wouldn't?
Yeah, you know, for some people it doesn't matter because they already know they're not going to fool them. It's just publicity for them.
Right.
They don't care. I really cared. I really wanted to fool them. I went there to fool them, and there was no way for me that I'm not going to fool them. For me also, their answer, you know, they're coding a lot, right, when they're telling you how it's done. And with me, they also said, it was funny, Penn in the end said, and we don't think you fooled us. What do you think, right? So that was kind of funny. But what they said basically was that I have marked cards, right? Mm-hmm. That's in that explanation, was that I have marked cards. But the problem is, you can't do what I did with marked cards. He said, well, we think that you looked back when Penn was putting the card back. And I said, no, I looked back when he was already shuffling the cards. And Teller looked at me and did, huh, and went back to Penn. And then, because normally they would discuss a lot, but in his earphone, one of the consultants, Johnny Thompson, that is one of the most knowledgeable magicians in the world, he just told them, guys, you were fooled.
The winner there gets to open for Penn and Teller.
By the way, there is also that trophy, right?
Yes. Ah.
Wait. There's a picture of that trophy right here.
So this is the actual trophy.
This is the trophy.
And this makes me regret that we're not on television.
And it says,
I fooled Penn and Teller.
It says,
F you. We'll take a picture of that after. There was another aspect that I think you must have found very pleasing, which was that Penn seemed to be very impressed with your deck of cards. He said they were beautiful. This is your design, these cards, aren't they?
Well...
Or not?
Not really.
Not really. Aha.
I hired a designer, my friend, from Sweden, from Stockholm, who is a magician and a designer at the same time. So I just came up with this special thing that is in those cards.
Yes.
And... I explained to him when I was in Stockholm what I have in mind, and I asked him if he would be interested in designing those cards. And then first I thought there were going to be trees. Then I just thought one day of butterflies on a floral pattern. So that's the concept is my idea. But then he took that and the system that I came up with, and he put those together. And
the execution was his, and the fine work, but the idea.
Yeah.
And I understand that these were crowdfunded as well.
It's true.
And that it wasn't so easy to find a manufacturer that could make
cards
slick enough or with the right qualities.
Yeah. I can't really tell you.
You can't tell me what those qualities are.
What the thing is, but there is only one factory in the world that is able to do it, to make it, and that's in Belgium, in Turnhout. It's the Matter Factory of Cardamundi, which is the largest manufacturer of cards and games in the world.
And the butterfly is a pretty good symbol because you have the whole metamorphosis. Penn mentioned that it was like a Rorschach test.
Yeah,
and they do look very fun. So, and are those available commercially since they were crowdfunded? Two people who backed the
Yes, they
project?
Are. They're all sold out, but Jan, name any card.
Name any card? Well, I'm not going to be very original. I'm going to say the Ace of Spades.
The Ace of Spades is very, very unoriginal. Okay.
Okay, now let me say something else.
All right.
How about the Four of Hearts?
I have a psychic connection with my cards. The Four of Hearts is right about here. Am I close?
Yeah, you're bang on. Exactly. That's sweet.
I just got to a card. It's funny. But what's also interesting, if I spell your name, which is J-A-N, what do we get?
The Ace of Spades. Awesome.
Jan Vellinger with that report, which was first broadcast in November of last year. And finally, it's time for our Hit of the Century, in which time you get a chance to vote on the best songs and tunes since 1918.
Hit of the Century.
We continue with the year 1946 and the hit song called The Light of the Promenades. Cities that were kept in darkness to protect them from bombings during the war were once again lit up. Normal streetlights replaced the blinking blue will-o'-wisps, neon store signs were quickly restored, and the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration began to fill store windows with never-before-seen goodies. The young generation at the time gladly welcomed a new era of peace. They enjoyed many new freedoms, including dance, which the Germans had prohibited during the protectorate period. The bands could barely keep up with the storm of demands for new dance music, and both older and more contemporary Anglo-American hits appeared in their programs. However, our Czechoslovak composers and songwriters would not allow themselves to be outdone. A first-rate melody from 1946 testifies to this. The theme of the song itself proved to be extremely relevant to all of its listeners. All the streets shine once more. There are thousands of lights everywhere. The lights from the promenades form a colourful waterfall. The lyricist of the foxtrot, Karel Kozel, and the composer Petr Kareš precisely captured the atmosphere of the time, full of joy and hope for a free life. Thank you.
If you've any comment about that or anything else in today's programme, then you can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on those social features, Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely happy to hear from you. But from me, Chris Johnston, for now, goodbye.